Welcome to Women in Translation, a series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more. In this interview, host Catherine Nicely of Palm Arch Press speaks with Romanian author Carmen Francesca Banciu about her novel, Fleeing Father.
Hello, greetings. This is Catherine Nicely, publisher of Palm Arch Press, here in Berlin, Germany, together with
Carmen Francesca Banciu, author at Palm Arch Press.
Palm Arch Press is an international publishing company in Berlin that aims to promote cultural diversity and international exchange beyond the mainstream. And we have a program that includes German and English literature, dramas, philosophy, art books. And our mission is to present the creative spirit of writers from all disciplines, and it's reflected by and in the context of the visual arts. We'd also together like to thank Andrew Singer for the invitation to be here on Trafficker Europe and for this possibility to introduce the upcoming book, Fleeing Father, which is a translation from the German, Vaterflucht, translated by Elena Mancini and Catherine Nicely. As a quick introduction, Carmen Francesca Banciu, she was born in Romanian Lipova, and she studied religious painting and foreign trade in Bucharest. And as a result of being awarded the International Short Story Award of the city of Arnsberg for the story Das strahlende Ghetto, the radiant ghetto, she was banned in 1985 from publishing her work in Romania. After the fall of the wall in 1991, she accepted an invitation extended by the DAAD, Berlin Artist in Residence Program, and then she came to Berlin, Germany. She's been living ever since, and she's employed as a freelance author. She writes articles for radio newspapers, as well as leading seminars for creativity and creative writing. And since 2013, she's acted as the co-editor of the multilingual e-magazine
Levure Littéraire.
She's received numerous literature prizes and scholarships, and I love working with Carmen Francesca Banciu. We've been working for 7 years together. We've been quite prolific. Of course, it's been an honor for me to be able to publish her. We have produced quite a bit. Our first book together was Leichtewin im Paradies. Thereafter, shortly, was Mother's Day, A Song of a Sad Mother, which is a translated out of the German, Das Lied der traurigen Mutter. We then published Berlin is My Paris, two of her books that she originally wrote in Romanian, Fenster in Flammen, Philotheks, Handbuch der Fragen. Of course, they were translated into German. These were both new editions. And then we had a project in collaboration with Vasiliki Rapti at the Harvard University. It was a poetry and translation workshop that was Light, Breeze, and Paradise. This was the English version of the first book that we had published here at Palm Arch Press. We also then, last year, produced a new edition of Ein Land voller Helden. We had a success, of course, due to her wonderful talent and being a novelist of distinction. Her book, Lebt wohl, ihr Genossen und Geliebten, Farewell, Dear Comrades and Lovers, was nominated in 2018 for the German Book Prize. This is one of the most prestigious awards for literature in German-speaking countries, Germany, Switzerland, Austria. They nominate 20 of the most significant books of the year. And yeah, this book was quite unusual because it was all in verse. It was quite astounding how she had written 380 pages in verse, and it was a novel.
Yes, it has the rhythm of poetry. It has also parts of it are poems and chapters at the same time, creating a story and in a book. But many of the chapters also work as poems.
Yes, and this is actually also connected directly to Fleeing Father, Vaterflucht, being that that was the third part of your trilogy that you had written.
The trilogy of the optimists.
Yes, which Fleeing Father was the first part of. And as I had mentioned, Mother's Day, Song of a Sad Mother, which we had brought out in 2015, is the second part of this trilogy. Elena Mancini, she's been accompanying Carmen Francesca's life for quite a long time. They are longtime dear friends. She's also written quite a bit of
Mancini, who's living in New York.
Yes.
Is a New Yorker.
And she has written several excellent literary essays and has done quite a bit of analysis about Banchu's work, her biography, and has also translated quite a bit. I'd like to read what she has written about Fleeing Father. I think it's quite an adequate introduction for the book. When the precocious daughter of a high-ranking communist official rebels against her patriarchal father and renounces the preordained path of the new human, the ideal citizen who would embody the qualities needed to fulfill the vision of a utopian communist system in Romania, she comes to a decisive crossroad. Fleeing Father chronicles the courageous journey of a young woman's struggle for freedom and individuality. Through art and sheer strength of will, she resists the extravagantly cruel dehumanization wrought by the ideology she was made to represent and discovers the hard-won meaning of achieving selfhood, with all of its triumphs and losses. Banchu's hypnotic style and sparse and unsparing language is eloquent and emotionally penetrating and speaks to all who have at one time or another sought self-discovery, forgiveness, and the hope of healing in the face of all forms of psychological and ideological divisions. Why don't we begin here with a section right from the beginning?
Yes, I will read first in German the first chapter, which is only one page. And I'll read it also in English. And the rest of the readings will be in English, of course. One. Eins. Mein Vater ist ein kleiner alter Mann mit Glaskugeln in den Augenhöhlen. Seit ich ihn das letzte Mal gesehen habe, und das ist schon eine Weile her, etwa 7 Jahre. Seitdem sind seine Augen blauer und gläserner, sein Mund größer geworden und strahlend das Silber in seinem Haar. Die Farbe seiner Haut ist gesünder. Mein Vater glaubt an die Zukunft. Mein Vater lebt in Rumänien und glaubt an die Zukunft des Sozialismus. Das gibt ihm Kraft, meine schweren Koffer zu tragen, die ich für ihn vollgepackt aus dem Westen mitgebracht habe. Mein Vater glaubt nicht an den Westen. Der Westen mit seinem verschwenderischen Wohlstand ist für ihn eine Fiktion. Eine Fiktion, die keiner zugeben will, wenn er zurückkommt, damit man ihn nicht auslacht, weil er gegangen ist. Deswegen trägt mein Vater die Koffer mit einer gewaltigen Kraft und lehnt es ab, ein Taxi zu nehmen. Ich muss mich fügen, denn ich bin gerade erst angekommen und habe noch kein rumänisches Geld. Es ist noch zu früh zum Wechseln. Ich muss mich fügen. Nach 24 Stunden Zugfahrt schleppe ich mich wie ein betrunkener Hund hinter meinem Vater her. Bin wieder das Kind, das Brave, das demnächst rebellieren wird. My father is a small old man with glass beads in his eye sockets. Since I last saw him, and that's a while ago, about 7 years, since then his eyes have become bluer and glassier, his mouth bigger and shinier, the silver in his hair. The color of his skin is healthier. My father believes in the future. My father lives in Romania and believes in the future of socialism. This invigorates him, gives him the strength to carry my heavy suitcases, which I brought from the West, packed full for him. My father doesn't believe in the West. The West, with its lavish prosperity, is a fiction to him. A fiction that no one will admit to when they come back, so that no one will laugh at them for leaving. That's why my father carries the suitcases with lots of strength and refuses to take a taxi. I have to fall into line, because I've just arrived and have no Romanian money yet. It's still too early to change. I have to fall into line. After a 24-hour train ride, I trail behind my father like a drunken hound. I'm the child again, the good one. The one who will soon rebel.
The novel is accompanied also with an afterword by Professor Sarah Jones from the University of Birmingham, United Kingdom. I'd like to read a section that also is descriptive about the past of the protagonist. Also, like much of Carmen Francesco's work, deeply personal and a reflection on the historical and political moment. Through her beautiful prose, which sometimes comes close to poetry, the author helps the reader to understand the feelings of loneliness and claustrophobia that marked the experience of growing up with an absent father who had never wanted children and was more dedicated to the cause than to his family, and with a neurotic and abusive mother. She showed the impact of self-sacrifice taken to the extreme and a dedication to an imagined future at the cost of a never-lived present. The lives of those born in the first half of the 20th century were marked by war, totalitarianism, genocide, and some believe that the only way to ensure their children did not suffer the same was to completely reform society in a new ideological framework. In their zeal, they forgot that their children also wanted to live now, not just tomorrow, and that the critique and dissent of the next generation did not mean a lack of support for the utopia that they wanted to build. We'll continue on with the second chapter.
Yes, I will read here about the upbringing of my character. 2. He is standing at the station in his old leather coat with his Kirgizian Astrakhan cap and is waiting for me. His lips, like the blades of a scissor. His lips were always cutting, unsparing. "You are worthless. Nothing will ever come of you, and no one will marry you." For years I have heard these phrases. For years I have carried the scissor ones with me, the deep scars of this unrelenting way of raising someone to perfection. "You can't make any mistakes," my father used to say, and I understood very early on what was expected of me. We were an exemplary family. I was proud of that. I was proud of every hardship that I could share with my parents. I had to be self-confident, self-critical, and responsible, influence others to make the world a better place. La valeur n'attend pas le nombre des années. We lived in the settlement of the Partidul Comunist Român in Block PCR. That's what our four-story apartment house was called. It was the first multi-story building in our little city, a progressive building with running water and WC for the most progressive strata of the country, and we belonged to it. All of the adult inhabitants of the PCR block were actively engaged in the well-being of the country. No, they fought for it in the class struggle. They were also fighters for the well-being of the fatherland and the blooming of the Communist Party. All fathers and many mothers in the building were party functionaries, propagandists. I had the indescribable fortune to have two politically conscious fighters in my own family. We were an exemplary family and belonged to one of the largest, to an origin, the origin of the PCR people. Even for the children of our origin, I had to be a role model. Mother and father expected it of me, and I could not disappoint them. Father, among other things, had taken it upon himself to produce the new human of the new era in his own family. I had more duties than the other children. My consciousness, my sense of responsibility had to be greater than that of the others. No childish excuses, no tricks, no playfulness. I can't remember ever being forgiving for a mistake. I never had time. I always had to do something useful, something that would get me somewhere, something that would also help others. My time had been strictly planned from childhood on. There was seldom time to play. I had to fight for the permission to be with people my own age. Many a time, a horde of children stood in front of my door, wanting to free me from my chores. They begged my parents, tried to persuade my mother. Now and again, she gave in, with a reproachful look. I knew exactly what it meant, which lectures I would get to hear afterwards, about the pitiful, stupid way I would waste my time, about how pitiful my views on life were. For everyone must lie on the beds as they make it. And my parents would sacrifice themselves for me, so that I would have a better life than they did, because no one would have sacrificed themselves so for them. They had to rely on their own strengths to make something of themselves, and no one would have spent so much as a penny on them, so that they could learn something, so that they could have an education, so that... Father always said that. As for mother, she had gone to boarding school, a private school for well-bred daughters. Piano, violin. I even took ballet lessons, even though ballet was considered a remnant of a petit bourgeois upbringing. This was compensated with gymnastic lessons. I hate gymnastics and every form of sport lessons. Piano, violin, ballet, gymnastics, Russian, French, English. I always had some type of lessons, whereas my friend Juliana was allowed to blithely push her doll stroller here and there. I enjoyed playing the piano, at first. The little, old, deaf, fat man with the grungy pink ears who always tapped on my fingers almost drove it out of me. He was supposed to be my piano teacher. Mother knew him from before, when she was still taking piano lessons. I don't believe this was mother's revenge. It was her own arbitrary way of conveying an image of life to me early on. I should learn to stand above things. In a sense, I succeeded, for I still today like playing the piano. With the violin, it went downhill quite early, when my teacher grabbed my sprouting breasts and I came home shaking without shoes. "I'll give you a cent, even two," he shouted after me. "I'll give you more, even more." My parents realized that an education shouldn't be acquired at any price, and felt that one had to be very careful so that the remnants of the former regime did not poison the children of the new era. Reactionary forces were hiding among us, and they should be exposed immediately. Everyone must contribute. We must be careful, and how fortunate that we succeeded this time. Piano, violin, ballet. Mother wanted me to walk, taking small steps, to eat, taking small bites, to learn to move softly and elegantly. I always enjoyed ballet lessons, but suddenly I was no longer allowed to go. I would have gladly danced my whole life, expressed my joys through dance. Express oneself, dance, lose oneself and forget, and find oneself again. But that was not the point of it. Mother was accused of acting unpolitically. Father was furious, horrified. Mother admitted to having made a political mistake.
Carmen Francesca, you mention Father, among other things, had taken upon himself to produce the new human of the new era in his own family. I think this would be interesting to know, what is the new human? What was the ideology of the new human?
Well, you know, after the war and after Romania became a socialist country, The ideal of the communists was to create the new human of the new era, which meant to be a person with only with qualities, no vices, no weaknesses, only a perfect person with qualities, with generosity and with the ability and the wish and to sacrifice themselves for this ideal of a new world, a new time, a new society where people are all equal, everybody gets enough for his living and according to his needs and according to his qualities. And it was expected from the children of the party functionaries to become the next generation functionaries, the next generation ideologists, and to become this new human. And for this, these children were observed in their development. They had a pressure not only in the family, but also in the society, because they were observed in their development. And as long they developed according to the ideology, everything was perfect. But if they were not in line, that meant that they were rebellious. These children, and in fact, the whole society was educated to abstain, to sacrifice, to not live in the present, but to work and sacrifice for the future generation. And this was like a mantra, you know, this sacrifice for the next generation. Everybody had to sacrifice. And from very early age, I read from chapter 16. About this kind of children and their upbringing, their education. Home means to my father's. My mother died a long time ago. I've always been an orphan. Affection, tenderness and warmth weaken character. Indicate poor upbringing. Un petit bourgeois. When I was 8, I got a wristwatch. It's the only birthday I still remember. Otherwise, birthdays were days like every other. Only one finally got something that what one needed anyway. I never got what I wished for. One shouldn't spoil an only child. Shouldn't endanger it, not let it slide in petit bourgeois selfish behavior. The girls in our building all had such beautiful doll carriages. I had wished for one of these too. Romania's relations with China were still good back then. That could be seen from my toys. I had lots of mechanical toys from China, of which my mother was so proud of. I was not yet political when I was 6 or 7. And I didn't want to know anything about propaganda and good relations with communist China. To me, a doll carriage like the one Juliana got, a doll carriage from Germany, was much better and what I wished for. My parents mutually explained me that more understanding was expected from me than from other children, that I had to learn to abstain and not give in to every whim. Be my own master, control myself, show my strengths, because we were supposed to be the new humans, the people of the new era, stronger than nature. We children of the party had to be an example for the others. I don't know whether all of the children of the PCR block got this lecture, but at some point, all of the girls got these damn doll carriages, these capitalistic white carriages that promoted comfort, laziness and degeneracy. But at some point, I too got a buggy. A buggy. A green one. So toilet door green that I was ashamed. I should be ashamed anyway, Father said, because I couldn't abstain. It was bad enough that Juliana's parents had relatives in the West. I don't know whether the fall of communism had already been determined at the time when the girls of the PCR block got their decadent doll carriages. You will see what will become of your daughter when you grant her every wish, said my father, when my mother got weak, gave in, and bought me a doll carriage, a buggy, a green one.
You were talking about these children being observed. Yeah, what do you mean by being observed?
Well, you know, as I told before, these children were observed in their development. And this was not only happening at school, but also during the free time. And I tell in Vaterflucht the story of my character, who is observed by a Securitate person who is like a shadow of her during the day. And because they wanted to know everything about her. And this is the moment when my character gets in conflict with the system, because she wants to apply everything that she learned to be this perfect person with a strong character, with the following truths. And the task would have been to spy on other people, peers, And these children have very soon a file. In the case of my character, follows her whole life in Romania until the revolution, the Romanian revolution, the fall of the system, the fall of the communism. And my character,
Maria,
even if the book is written in the first person, but being a novel, it is, my character is Maria. She will be followed until she becomes 18. And at that time, she already has quite a big file with a lot of information about her. And it's the moment when she gets to be interrogated, because she has her views and her deeds, her actions are not conform with the system. Chapter 3. I wasn't even 16 when it all began. I already had the pioneering days behind me and a terminated career as chairperson of the Uniunea Tineretului Comunist, the communist youth organization in my class at the time. The war was over. The revolution had won. Communism had prevailed. And nevertheless, as I said at assemblies, young communists must be vigilant, organize themselves properly, take a critical stance, participate in society to the best of their ability, not only pay their monthly due. That wouldn't have been so bad under the circumstances at the time. After all, the party called for criticism, especially self-criticism, and to a certain degree even called for action. The word action excited us. It ruled out the suffocating monotony. It was connected with heroism and revolution, with violence, a form of violence that we were not aware of at the time. At the time, the revolution was thought to be over. Only much later did Ceausescu say that communists were professional revolutionaries. Revoluționar de profesie, he called it. The revolution continues. It is never complete. The class struggle never ends. Everything that father and mother had taught me, I wanted to put into practice. I felt obliged to include others. I myself would have liked to have changed some things in the organization. The option was taken from me. I was relieved from my duties, relieved, unburdened, freed, sentenced to passivity. I wasn't even 16 when it all began. My performance at school was still good at the time. My talents diverse. I was regarded as the Wunderkind, fluent in several languages. I was self-confident and had my own views, which I also defended. I thought that one didn't have to necessarily thank to the party for the mechanization of agriculture. I also said it out loud. One only had to look around at what was happening in the world. Then one would know that development and progress were the products of society. That was not received well. Whether father was informed about my statements, is unknown to me. Probably not. It was only later that I was held accountable for it. All this, and much more, was later in my files.
Yeah, these files, Carmen Francesco, you mentioned it earlier. What happens with these files?
You know, in Romania, probably in the other countries too, it was important to have a clean file, clean dossier. In my case, for instance, my file was compromised already with 16 because I got a task which I couldn't, in fact, accept because of moral reasons. And I put myself in danger starting with that moment. I didn't know about this, and I didn't know that the shadow I had didn't disappear after refusing the task, but on the contrary, I was even more observed, and with 18, I wanted to organize a demonstration in the city I was living because I thought that the party doesn't know about the real problems in the country. I had the opportunity to learn about them because I was studying church painting, and we were doing also practical work in a way that we painted churches and restored old churches. And this happened mostly at the countryside. We lived at the houses of the farmers, you know, from each area. And so I got in touch not only with the life of people in the city, but also with the life of the people at the countryside, which was even more difficult than in the city at that moment. And all these things together made my file to grow, you know. And my file, and not only my file, but these kind of files included declarations from colleagues, from schools, from teachers, from friends, from neighbors, and so on. So there was a portrait of a person in a very diverse and multi-layered way.
You actually just kind of revealed the question I think all readers always have: how autobiographical is Fleeing Father?
Yes, I know this is a question that everybody has. I mean, even as a writer, you always want to know somehow. You are curious about the real person behind the written book. As you know, Maria is a character that is going through all my writing, almost all my writing. She is
all your novels. She's
my novels and short stories too. Not every short story, but many short stories. And you can see her development from book to book. In this case, yes, it is Maria, but a lot of the experience of Maria is my own experience. It's a novel and not an autobiography because I wanted to have the freedom to express certain situations and feelings, not necessarily through historical truths, but a lot of the events and the moments evoked in the book are experienced by myself, including the fact that my character will be interrogated for many, many weeks or many months, in fact, after she becomes an adult.
Yeah. Oh, gosh, interrogation. I mean, that's something I can't imagine what that is. Can you maybe explain a little bit more about interrogation?
Well, yes, the character Maria, after she wants to organize a demonstration and several things about that I evoke in the book, she will be interrogated. She will be taken from the street, you know, like being arrested and taken to the security department, security of the state, and interrogated for several months. She has to come every morning and for many, many hours. There are a few security officers who are in a so-called Kreuzverhör. I don't know how you call this.
A cross-hearing.
And put an immense pressure upon her in the end to convince her to collaborate. And the pressure of the family is also very, very big, because the father feels totally ashamed that his daughter is interrogated, and he feels betrayed by the daughter. Yeah, I will read chapter 22. I will read a few paragraphs. Maybe this will give an idea. After months of interrogation, the young woman collapses, and the mother puts a pressure on the father to intervene and help the daughter. Chapter 22. Father decided to give in, to listen to mother. "She's your daughter too," mother said. But father never wanted a daughter. He went to the Consiglio de Partid, to the party organization of the local government, told them about me. They already knew. "We can't do anything for you, comrade. If your daughter is guilty, she must pay for it. You didn't raise her right. We didn't expect this from you." Father came home troubled. He sat down and wrote a letter. He wrote for several days. Now and again, he asked me, "Are you sure you have nothing to blame yourself for?" I didn't feel guilty. I didn't even know what accusations were. "You're penpals in the West," said Father. "The party does not like that. You surely don't want to go to the West." "No," I said, "I want to paint churches and write novels." "That," Father said, "the party definitely doesn't like." Mother said, "For so many years the party had nothing against that, nothing against penpals." "The times are changing," Father said. "The class enemy lurks everywhere." Mother went from one headache to the next. The pain didn't stop at all. Mother's pain hurt me. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't help her. She didn't get to work. She lay pale and tense in bed. "What have you done to us? What will become of you? Your father is right." Father wrote a letter to the party, a letter of loyalty. Father said, "All that I've sacrificed over these years, all that cannot have been for nothing." I didn't quite know what Father meant by that. He wrote his letter. He underscored his activity, his work in the service of our society, declared that he did not feel guilty and did not believe that his daughter was guilty of anything. His daughter had grown on healthy soil, with healthy nourishment. She could not be a threat to the socialist society. Father wrote that he was so convinced of all of the things he cited that he would vouch for them with his life. And should it be proven otherwise, he was prepared to pay with a death sentence. I got to read his letter. "Sign it," said Father. "Sign it if you're innocent." I signed. I signed without hesitation.
Wow, yeah, that's really powerful. That really shows the impact of ideology.
Yeah, and ideology also, how it puts its mark in the relationships inside a family. I mean, that there are conflicts that are not only political, but also human conflicts that arise created by ideology and politics.
I also wanted to read a section from Professor Sarah Jones afterwards. She expresses the multiple ways in which Bantu's work is relevant to the present and also to the reader, whose past is located in a very different time and place, including for the women born in England, which is, of course, she from the United Kingdom in the early 1980s. And they're once again living in a time of populism under the threat of a turn to authoritarianism. And the Europe that was united by the fall of the Berlin Wall in 1990 once again faces the prospect of division, Brexit, the rise of right extremism, particularly in those countries to the east of the Elbe, economic crisis, and the closing of the borders due to the pandemic that has ravaged our continent and the world. And she also writes, was the past representative in Carmen Francesca's novel ever really overcome? What was lost in the rush to consign communism to the scrap heap of history? Are we still searching for the new human? Carmen Francesca's works do not offer answer to these questions, but they help us ask them. And they do that in a way that also touches on our experience of being human. It's not only under communism that children cannot live up to their parents' unrealistic expectations, or that parents project their dashed hopes for life onto their children, or that we experience loneliness and regret. I too have become a parent, and now I read Fleeing Father through different eyes. In 2009, it made me reflect on my relationship with my own parents. In 2020, I read it thinking about my daughters. And that, too, is what great literature can do. It can bring us one step closer to being the parents, children, friends, and humans that we want to be.
This has been Catherine Nicely interviewing Romanian author Carmen Francesca Bantu, and we've enjoyed several excerpts from her novel, Fleeing Father, due out in English translation by Catherine Nicely and Elena Mancini in May 2021 from Palm Art Press. Women in Translation is an audio series showcasing the richness of European women authors, translators, and more. This series is executive produced by Traffica Europe Radio. Please sign up at our website to stay informed about upcoming shows. Thanks for listening.